This is Inspired, a production of Interfaith Voices. I'm your host, Amber Kahn. We now turn to sociologist Andrew Whitehead. He, along with Samuel Perry, co-authored Taking America Back for God, Christian Nationalism in the United States. Their work is the byproduct of extensive research and offers new insights into one of President Trump's most reliable voting blocs, white Christian evangelicals. I want to ask you what you saw and what did you take away from the events of Monday?
Monday evening or afternoon was really fascinating on a number of levels. President Trump gave a speech that was very authoritarian about bringing law and order. You know, you can draw a line historically to other presidents that have used that and kind of the racial undertones of that law and order and cracking down on troublemakers, those types of things, and declared himself an ally of peaceful protesters. But then right after that, they cleared the square using flash grenades and tear gas. Even the clergy of the, the church that he was going to go stand in front of, those people were forced away from their own church who had been there all afternoon giving out water. So he walked over and, after giving this speech about cracking down on troublemakers, held up a Bible and took pictures, didn't go in the church, didn't talk to the clergy of the church, didn't open the Bible, didn't quote from the Bible, didn't recite anything from the Bible. So it was really wild to see this juxtaposition. For us, I think squaring that authoritarian rhetoric with then these religious symbols of a Bible held in the air in front of a church, Christian nationalism really helps us make sense of what was going on there. And I think what you can see throughout his presidency and even before as he was a candidate, when his back is up against the wall, he is going to speak out to those that have most consistently supported him, which are white evangelicals. And now for us, we think Christian nationalism, which is very popular among white evangelicals, helps explain exactly why. And so those religious symbols were basically used to help baptize that authoritarian speech as this is a part of God's plan. And Trump is the only person who can save us, in quotes, from them, as he says it, you know, the people that are rioting or whatever else. And so again, Christian nationalists in the U.S. don't necessarily need Trump to be religious, to open a Bible, to go to a church or pray with clergy. They want to see someone who says, I see you and I hear you. I will help enact your particular vision for the country by providing access to the levers of power, and so that they can use those then to transform the culture in their own image. And I think Monday was one of the most perfect distillations of that relationship.
Can you give us a little background on what you study and what got you interested in it?
Yeah, I would love to. So Christian nationalism, as we define it, as this desire to see the U.S. be distinctively Christian in its national identity, its sacred symbols, and its public policies. And the desire is to see Christianity privileged in the public sphere above other religions. But in our research over the years that culminated in a book that my colleague Samuel Perry at the University of Oklahoma, that he and I just released this year, we find that associated with Christian nationalism are a lot of other things like authoritarianism, even white supremacy and sexism. So when people are arguing for we want America to be more Christian, especially if those people are white and Protestant, they have a very specific vision for what that America should be. And a lot of times it's to benefit and privilege their own group above and beyond other groups. What got us interested in this, I think for me personally, growing up in the Midwest and kind of a religious area, it was something that you just accepted and believed. But then as I started to move along into college and grow a little older, started to question that and read what historians are writing. And so that was an interesting personal journey. And so that kind of overlapped with my journey as a scholar, where I was wondering, well, believing that the U.S. should be Christian above and beyond, you know, other religions or even non-religion, does that influence how people see the world? And we started to find that, wow, Christian nationalism really affects how people see the world in all different arenas, whether it's politics, whether it's racial issues, religious freedom issues, gender, sexuality.
For listeners who have not yet read your book, what is the ladder of white Christian nationalism as an ideological movement?
So, yeah, when we ask these six questions of Americans, things like, should the federal government advocate Christian values? Should prayer be allowed in public schools? We're able to assign values to each response. So we're able to create a scale from 0 to 24. So those people at the higher end are strongly embracing Christian nationalism. What we really wanted to do was see, well, are there kind of distinct groups within this? And so we're able to break that scale into four different groups. And so Americans, any American, is either a rejecter, and so these are the people that are at the lowest end of the scale that completely reject Christian nationalism. Are they a resistor? So they're a little uneasy about it, maybe undecided, but they lean towards opposition towards this idea of a Christian nation. Are they an accommodator? These are people that believe that the U.S. is a Christian nation. They think Christianity is probably a positive thing in the U.S., but they don't wholeheartedly support it. And then we have ambassadors at the upper end of the scale. And so these are Americans who believe that Christianity is the answer. It should be privileged in the public sphere. It should be at the forefront of everything we do. And so again, those four groups from rejectors, resistors, accommodators, and ambassadors help us to see that it isn't just for or against Christian nationalism, but there are actually important differences between those that, you know, kind of support it or kind of don't support it. This helps, I think, hopefully bring a little more nuance that most Americans are actually resistors and accommodators. If we put those together, they're well over 50% of the population. And so many of us, many Americans, are in the middle somewhere. And I think those are the people that hopefully we can help see the issues and problems, not with Christianity just as a religion, but when it's privileged over any other religion, right? So trying to help them see the benefits of religious pluralism and that if one group is being pushed down, it hurts all of us.
What do you mean when you say those who may realize or not that they are part of this movement seek to privilege Christianity, white Christian identity mm-hmm. over others?
You know, this idea of privilege is multifaceted, but what it gets down to, I think, is that when we talk about Christian nationalism and seeing Christianity privileged in the public sphere, what we're really saying is that they have access to power. And so one example that you can see is when you hear people talk and they say, we need to get the right people in office, Christians that embrace this Christian nationalism ideology. If we can get them in office, then the U.S. is going to be on the right path.
When somebody says, I want the right person in office, how do you as a social scientist then unpack what that means?
I think a lot of times it's just seeing who then they're supporting and then go and look at those people. And a lot of times who they're supporting, they'll say they're a Christian, that God has blessed the USA and we need to enact Christian principles. And they'll use those code words and kind of this subtext of, you know, this is the way that it's always been and the way that it always should be. And that's what they want to do. So I think that helps us see exactly what they mean when they say the right person. Look at who then they're supporting, and you'll see that they'll, again, from President Trump on down and through the years, this isn't a new phenomenon. It's been with us. They'll always be pointing to the United States is blessed because of God, and we need to return to that. We need to rely on that. We need to follow the Bible, all of those things.
Does that just mean blessed in a general sense, or does it mean blessed to deliver certain outcomes?
When they say blessed by God, it isn't neutral, because then they feel, and they'll tell us this over and over, that in order to either maintain that blessing or to return to that blessing, we need to do X, Y, and Z. And generally, these other actions that we need to do to stay blessed as a nation will generally be in favor or privilege their in-group and probably hurt some out-group, because a lot of times it becomes tribal. When they say God has blessed us, they see a very particular God, and it's generally the God of white Protestant Christianity.
Mm. What I'm hearing you say is that there is a sense that we are, quote-unquote, on the correct track or on the right track.
when we talk about Christian nationalism, it doesn't necessarily operate the same way within different groups. For instance, in one survey, we'll use a measure that says, you know, do you believe that in order to be a true American, one must be Christian? And so when we look at people that say, well, it's very important that you be Christian to be a true American, if those people are white, they'll have very different views towards explanations towards racial injustice, let's say. But if those Americans are black who say that it's very important you be Christian to be a true American, they're going to have much stronger ideas about the where racial injustice comes from that is completely opposite from white people and even other black people. So when we talk about Christian nationalism and this very specific vision, most of the time it is a white Christian nationalism. And so I think, too, to your broader point, when we look at the writings of Martin Luther King Jr. or Frederick Douglass, they, too, were saying that America is a Christian nation, but they were essentially calling out, if we're truly a Christian nation, then we need to be fulfilling the laws and dictates of the Christian scriptures, which is all men are actually created equal. And they were saying that the U.S. has walked away from that, and that's something we're continuing to explore.
Mm. Unpack the word troublemakers for me, because I want to understand what you hear when you hear the president say, trust me, I'll take care of the troublemakers.
So kind of two things. When we measure Christian nationalism, you're right in that some of these phrases that we ask Americans sound so innocuous. When Trump, especially in this example, is talking about troublemakers and cracking down, based on research, Josh Davis, a colleague of ours that has written on this, and others, and historians too, are showing that some of those phrases are really, they began to emerge in the 1980s in reference to inner city black Americans. There were racial implications to saying troublemakers or cracking down. And so those that, even in our own research, we find that sympathize with Christian nationalism or strongly embrace it, they're more likely to agree that police treat blacks the same as whites, and they're more likely to agree that police shoot blacks more often than whites because blacks are inherently more violent than whites. And so when we're talking about state-sanctioned violence towards black communities, you know, when Trump is saying he's going to crack down on troublemakers, these shows of force in the past have fallen on minority communities more often. And for white Christian nationalists, you know, they won't just approve of them, but they'll see them as necessary because they have seen that this outgroup, or they have identified this outgroup, these troublemakers, or in other quotes, you'll see people talking about thugs or black thugs using these words to basically say that this group is deserving of state violence, that we have to use that in order to keep them in line.
Are you arguing that that word, thug and troublemaker, are enough to invoke images of an entire subgroup of Americans based on race?
I think that the social science and that research makes that clear. As we interview Americans or as we look at when they respond to these things, they're seeing that, not necessarily seeing a specific person, but when we talk about troublemakers, they're generally thinking about, a racial subgroup.
Can I ask you to talk a little bit about the historical roots of white Christian nationalism before we get to present day?
The roots are long within the U.S., and I think really the history of Christianity in the United States lays the groundwork even before the U.S. As a country was born, in the late 1700s. So as the first Europeans were coming here, we see their ideas about Christianity and what it means to be in a Christian community and start these colonies. All of that begins very early, and we can see threads through those colonies and then through the 1700s. And then soon after the United States is born, what they were really looking for were explanations. That's when the hagiographies started to be written about George Washington and the birth of the U.S. And so Christianity and the Christian faith was a part of that. A lot of times during moments of social, cultural crisis, we see this kind of uptick and this wave of trying to define who we are as a people. And what is always a part of that is our religion. White Christian nationalism is really an outgrowth of the response of the moral majority that came together in the 1970s, who were responding to the cultural upheaval of the 1960s and the civil rights movement. And so we see Jerry Falwell and other religious right leaders really responding to integration and some of the changes going on racially in the U.S. And they obviously kept those, you know, further back and kind of said, well, this is about abortion or homosexuality. I think what we study today is really an outgrowth of this latest iteration that was really birthed in the 1970s and then in the 1980s came on the scene much more with the election of Reagan. And so I think we're still dealing with a lot of that movement today. And in some ways, you could look politically at Trump as kind of the end game of that movement, where we're at, where for them, again, it isn't about the politician being one of them necessarily, but just that this politician must give them access to power and the halls of power.
You said the personal piety is not something folks are looking for. What do you mean by that?
What makes Trump such a perfect test of the power of Christian nationalism is that, unlike his Republican predecessors that generally were religious, pious men, Trump makes really no attempts to say that he has a personal relationship with Jesus or know much about the Bible. And so in that sense, we're able to see that it's more about, for many white Christian nationalists, it's more about having somebody in place that will do what they want, like remake the federal judiciary, rather than maybe a pious person there that maybe won't do what they want. So you could even look back to Jimmy Carter. As a person, as an individual, he's incredibly pious, and nobody will question that, still teaches Sunday school. But the moral majority that arose in the late 70s, they were upset that he didn't give them as much as they wanted. Right. And so, again, it wasn't about the personal piety of the person in power, but are they going to do what we want? And so famously, they turned on him and threw their support to Reagan, even though Jimmy Carter was, you know, the first evangelical president. And so, again, Trump's personal religiosity matters little. What matters is that he gives them the opportunity to do what they want to remake the culture in their image or towards their own political ends.
Have you noticed, or are you watching to see if that dissent from within the Republican ranks, is that shifting attitude? Is that being heard in a way that we may not see or appreciate?
It's still so early. Even kind of the polls that are continually out in the public haven't quite come back and probably aren't picking up yet what type of movement is there. It's definitely going to be something that we're going to watch for and think about going into the future. Civil society, or even a democratic society where there's sharing of power, white Christian nationalism and Christian nationalism creates a lot of difficulties for that, because as they see and enact their vision as from God, compromise, just you can't compromise if God said this is the way it should be. And so that is why I think authoritarianism is so strongly connected to Christian nationalism, and that we see this in our data as well, that Americans who embrace Christian nationalism are much more likely to agree that we should crack down on troublemakers. We actually ask those questions, and really they see it as by any means necessary, because again, if God has demanded that the U.S. be Christian, they should achieve it by any means necessary. And if that takes somebody, a strong man, an authoritarian, to do that, and possibly even using military force against its own citizens, they're going to be more likely to support that, because again, those other citizens must not really care about a true United States, right? If they aren't on board, they might be trying to tear down what God wills, because if God wills it, they're asking, who are we to resist it? So I think that's the connection. And so as Jim Mattis and John Kelly and others that were in support of the president come out and speak against it, I think it may turn some Americans who we identify as accommodators, those Americans who lean towards supporting and embracing Christian nationalism, but not wholeheartedly, they may see some of the dangers here. But ambassadors, who we identify as those Americans who strongly embrace Christian nationalism, I think they will be less likely to be swayed by any voice that differs from what Trump is doing. Especially with Christian nationalism, it'll be difficult because it is enshrined so centrally in a lot of congregations all throughout our country that until those start to change, people are going to have that ideology supported from the pulpit or from, you know, their fellow parishioners.
That was sociologist Andrew Whitehead, who, along with Samuel Perry, co-authored Taking America Back for God, Christian Nationalism in the United States. Coming up, we shift gears to take a closer look at how rituals are adapting in response to COVID-19 to allow for connection across physical distance. Stay with us.